This is the Rain Report for the week of April 14th, 2018. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0, DGY. In mid-March, I was working on a story for Amateur Radio Newsline on the Jupiter Amateur Radio Club and their automatically piloted drone operating in the Pacific Ocean with an autonomously operated FT-8 ham radio station aboard. I had to edit down the interview to under 3 minutes for the Newsline presentation. My conversation with Kurt Kiso, N6FW, contained so much useful info that we decided to share a much longer version of that conversation with the Rain Report audience. Here's Kurt Kiso.
We are a scientific research foundation founded back in the early 2000s, initially around listening to humpback whales in the waters off of Hawaii. That developed into building electronic systems that would allow us to listen to the humpback whales on shore, as well as stream them onto the internet. From there, we were using buoys to collect that data. So we would have hydrophones attached to buoys. We'd have a UHF repeater system up on the mountain in Hawaii that would hear those buoys and then repeat the signal so that we could capture it on shore and then ultimately stream it onto the internet. As we were doing that project, we struggled with keeping the buoys moored. The challenging part of the system was always the anchor system, or the noise of the anchor system that the hydrophone would pick up. Necessity is the mother of invention, they say. We decided that we needed a way to keep the hydrophone in place without an anchor system. And so we invented a technology called the Wave Glider, which is an autonomous maritime vehicle that harvests wave energy for propulsion. So we developed that, ultimately developed a company to take that product to market, spun that company out of the Research Foundation. That company was named Liquid Robotics. Over the course of the subsequent decade, Liquid Robotics developed and perfected the invention and has sold hundreds of units to the government, oil and gas, and scientific research. Meanwhile, Jupiter Research Foundation continued to be a customer of Liquid Robotics, and we acquired a few wave gliders ourselves. Subsequently, we put those wave gliders to work in different capacities. One, of course, is continuing to have a hydrophone on station so that we can listen to the humpback whales and put them on the web when they're in Hawaii in the winter. We've also developed some other technologies, telemetry technologies, some different sensors. One that's very interesting is a microscope that's actually a real-time imaging microscope that stays out on the ocean for months at a time, collecting images of plankton and other microscopic subjects. Meanwhile, while all of this was happening, those of us that are hams inside of Jupiter Research Foundation thought it would be interesting to put a beacon, ham station, on a wave glider. This is probably about, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. So we built a little QRP CW beacon on 20 meters and put it out in the water. And sure enough, you could hear it all over the place. Eventually, we decided we'd like something more interactive. And that led to the current project that we're engaged in today, which is called HF Voyager. The wave glider itself consists of three components, what we call the surface expression or float. And in your mind's eye, imagine a paddleboard or a large surfboard. And on that are solar panels for collecting solar energy to generate electricity, as well as GPS receiver, any other radio equipment you might have, or surface-based sensors, electronics, batteries, all of those sorts of things are housed on the float. Then there is an umbilical, which is a component that connects the float down to the propulsor, or we call it the sub. And the sub is where the actual wave energy is converted into thrust. In your mind's eye, envision a spine with wings on either side that looks kind of like a Venetian blind if you're looking straight down at the sub. Those wings are hinged on their leading edge. The motion that we're harvesting is as every wave peak goes by, the float is lifted relative to, let's say, the seafloor. And then as the trough comes by, gravity pulls the float back down closer to the seafloor. Well, as that occurs, there is a relative difference in the motion of the water at the surface where the float is and at 8 meters depth where the sub is. That relative difference in motion causes the wings to, they're hinged on their leading edge, and so as the float pulls the system up through the water column, the wings tilt, leading edge up, trailing edge down. And then as the wave trough comes by and the float goes lower and the sub sinks, if you will, through the water column, those wings tilt so the trailing edge is up relative to the leading edge being down. And so if you envision this occurring kind of in a sinusoidal form, you see that the wings flap. Well, that flapping motion is essentially a vector transformer converting the vertical motion into horizontal thrust. And so what we've created is, as long as there is wave energy, we have perpetual motion. I mean, it's not a perpetual motion machine, but it will go and continue to flap as long as there's wave energy. So that drives us forward. At the tail of the sub, we have a rudder, and that rudder allows us to steer left or right. On the surface, there's a GPS, so we know where we are, and we can calculate the heading to where we want to go. We send that heading information down to the sub, and using its compass and its rudder, it points itself in the right direction, and that allows us to essentially continue to move in, you know, towards our target. If we want to hold station somewhere, we basically just make a circle around a target or fly a figure eight through a target. If in the case of the HF Voyager mission, we want to sail across an ocean, we set up a series of waypoints and the wave glider flies from one wave point to the next at a speed of approximately 2 knots. So if you can imagine, this is always moving at about 2 knots across the surface of the ocean. You know, it takes us, you know, roughly a day to go, say, 40, 50 miles, depending on conditions. The more wave energy there is, the faster we go, up to about 2.5 knots. And of course, if the wave energy dies down, if we find ourselves in doldrums, we can be going extremely slow. You know, in the worst case scenario, we just would drift. So the true speed across ground ultimately is a combination of available wave energy versus the current and whatever that allows us to do. But I typically say that our mission plan should consider us going somewhere between 25 and 40 miles a day. That's how the wave glider system works. One other component of the wave glider that I really need to mention is its command and control system is via the Iridium satellite network. And again, this is a commercial product. So whether you're science or commercial or defense, you need a way to control the system, and Iridium supports all of those markets. It's a reliable, ubiquitous communication system. When you purchase or acquire a wave glider, it has an Iridium satellite system embedded in it, and the control of the wave glider is managed through a website, and the website then is connected to the Iridium system, and so command and telemetry can go back and forth between the operator and the platform. And this all works fine. Then you need to put a wave glider to use. Beyond just driving it around on the surface of the ocean, you want it to do a task. Well, again, in the case of Jupiter Research Foundation, our first task was to host our hydrophone so that we could listen to humpback whales on shore in Hawaii. That was typically a nearshore mission within line of sight of the shore. We initially started out with UHF radios. But then ultimately, in the past few years, as cellular systems have improved and cellular modem technology and data rates have become more affordable, we've changed to a digital stream, and we now use a Verizon modem, a 4G modem on board to stream digital audio from the hydrophone to shore, and then that's what ends up on our website. So that was the primary mission for Jupiter.
You're listening to a conversation I had with Kurt Kiso, N6FW of the Jupiter Amateur Radio Club and their autonomous digital ham radio station operating from a drone in the Pacific Ocean. My conversation with Kurt will resume after I remind you that these Rain Report hamcasts are available from therainreport.com.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
As time went on, we decided to deploy HF on board. Our original project was a CW beacon. That was interesting, but we decided we wanted something interactive. We initially explored the concept of having an interactive CW station, but then we quickly moved to looking at PSK-31 as a digital mode communication with the wave glider. And again, this would be an onboard station that would allow an amateur radio operator from anywhere in the world to contact our station on the Wave Glider and have a brief QSO. And this project was going along very well. In fact, our intent was to actually add a chatbot-type architecture on the back end of that station on the water so that an operator on shore, although you'd know you were talking to an automated system, the interactive QSO would be something like you were actually interacting with a human. Well, as we were about to launch that for a significant mission for a few months, FT8 came to light. And so this was back last year in June, July timeframe. When we had a chance to look at the opportunity to deploy FT8 on board our system, we decided that that was probably an even more efficient and more enjoyable way to interact with this maritime mobile autonomous station. So we delayed our launch. We took some time to write some custom software that would allow us to have our station both call CQ and respond to calls in the FT8 mode. This is all on 20 meters, I should add. We currently are a monoband system, although there are plans in the future to add multiband. But the way we operate today is we're on almost 24/7. If there's a significant overcast or dense cloud cover, we may need to shut down for a day or two to preserve our solar energy, our battery power, which of course is regenerated through solar energy. But generally, the system is on, and you can either call our call sign, Kilo Hotel 6 JF, as in Jupiter Foundation, stroke MM, or listen for our CQ and have a QSO with us via FT8, just right above 14074 in the typical watering hole for FT8 on 20 meters. To operate within both the letter and the spirit of the rules, we did a couple of things that I think are rather important. There is a control operator anytime the system's on. That control operator is connected to the platform via the Iridium control channel so that if there were any issues with our transmission or performance of the station, they have the ability out of band to either address the issue or turn the station off. So we have full-time control operators when the station is on. And the second thing is, we wrote some algorithms that actually make sure that we don't step on other stations. So when the operator on shore asks the HF Voyager in the water to call CQ, the first thing the Voyager does is looks at the last minute of history on what signals were where within the waterfall and finds an opening before it will transmit. We felt that it was the appropriate thing to do so that we could be a courteous operator. Those things were successful. We then had to address the logging. So basically, every time we make a contact, we use Iridium to send the log information back to shore where we process it. And currently, it appears in near real time on the user portal site for our project. If you simply search for HF space Voyager on Google, you'll go right to our page. But there is a user portal page that shows a world map where the glider is today and all the contacts that it's made. And you can filter those contacts by call sign or by date, time, and so forth. And you can see your name in the list. That all happens in near real time. The second thing is I manually today extract the data from the database and post to QRZ in a log there, again, under our call sign. If you search for Kilo Hotel 6 JF stroke MM, you'll find the log there. And as of this morning, I have 1,236 QSOs in the log, and that's all pretty much transpired since the first of the year when we launched this mission. We have 20 countries in the log, and I think it's about 870 unique operators that make up that 1,200 contacts. So it's been pretty exciting. I think one thing that's worth mentioning here, this interview is only the second piece of public relations or promotion, if you will, that we've done with the project. The only other thing was we were included in a press release for the primary mission on this particular Wave Glider, which I'll discuss in a moment. The point here is all of those contacts and all of the interest in this project has basically been viral or organic. We haven't done anything to push this mission because this was really our first mission and we wanted to see how it worked before we put it out there that it was going to be up all the time and that it was going to be problem-free. We really wanted to test it. Well, the test has gone very well. It's been in the water since January 15th on this mission and it's been working great. Let me describe the station itself. On board, in one of the waterproof payload containers, we have an Elecraft KX-3 connected to a Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi is where the WSJTX software, our modified version of that software, is running. It's also where all the logging occurs and the processing of the contacts and log files and packaging those up to send them to shore via the WaveGlider's Iridium system. So inside that payload box, you've got the KX-3, the Raspberry Pi, and some power control systems. The KX-3 is equipped with an automatic antenna tuner, which in this case is critical because, as you can imagine, as this moves around on the water, the antenna tuning changes. We typically will ask the Elecraft to check the antenna tuning once a day just in case something's gotten out of whack and we don't want to damage the radio. So speaking of the antenna, we have what is typically a bumper-mounted Hustler mast with a top-loading coil, again on 20 meters. The antenna is approximately 6.5 feet tall above the deck of the WaveGlider itself. We went to a lot of effort to harden it for the marine environment. We have a significant spring, the kind that you would think of on a military vehicle to support the antenna, just above the waterline, and then the antenna above that. All the joints, of course, have been sealed, and heat shrink tubing on everything. We also have a bronze plate in the base of the surfboard, if you will, below the waterline that actually acts as a coupler for our ground plane. So the antenna is basically a top-loaded quarter wave antenna counterpoised against the surface of the ocean. We typically run either 3 or 5 watts, which is plenty of power. And as I mentioned earlier, we've had contacts in over 20 countries. The one European country is Norway. And of course, we pretty much have contacts all throughout the Pacific Rim and Oceania as well. And that's all, again, done with just 5 watts. I think we have about 12 members in the club. It's not very large. Jupiter Research Foundation is filled with people that are scientific-minded, engineering-minded, creative-minded. We're kind of makers, if you will. About maybe a third to a half of the Jupiter Research Foundation employees, it's a small organization, about 15 people. I would say maybe 6 or 7 of us are amateur radio operators. So as we discussed it, we decided that we should form an amateur radio club. The foundation offered to underwrite projects that we wanted to do that would include amateur radio. As a result, our club has this fantastic benefactor, which happens to be some of the members' employer. So it worked out well that way, but it's also allowed us to have a station here at the office in Los Altos, California, and another station at our facility in Hawaii, where we do our WaveGlider operations. So it's a unique amateur club in that regard that it's sponsored by our organization. But I think very similar to back in the day when many large corporations had amateur radio clubs, and you'd frequently see a trailer or antennas out in the parking lot of their headquarters buildings. We're very similar to that as electronics aficionados, science aficionados, physicists. It's a natural fit for amateur radio to be a part of the things that we're interested in. It's a blessing that our organization sponsors this.
And that concludes my conversation with Kurt Kiso, N6FW, of the Jupiter Amateur Radio Club, who are operating HF Voyager, a self-contained, interactive, FT8 digital ham radio station aboard an aquatic drone in the Pacific Ocean. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. The Rain Report Hamcast updates Saturdays on therainreport.com, and it can be heard Saturday evenings as part of the block of amateur radio programming on WTWW Shortwave on 5085 kHz from Lebanon, Tennessee. Keep on hamming!